Thank you, Beth. Hi, I'm Linda S., and I'm an alcoholic. And I haven't gotten a chip for this birthday yet, so it feels pretty special tonight. My birthday was actually October the 16th. I was exposed to alcohol at a very early age, not in my body, in my father's body. He was a raging alcoholic, quite violent, and as the eldest of three children, I really thought it was my job to keep my younger sister and brother safe. And we had a church life. You know, I was raised with a really strong religious background. And it seemed to me that what I heard on Sunday mornings and what happened in my household had very little to do with each other. And for years, I asked God to get my father sober. You know, either get him arrested, get him in jail, get him sober, get him something. And I fell a long way away from that first higher power that I had as a result of God disappointing me and not getting my dad sober. And God was in one of my fourth steps, you know, as a resentment because I didn't get what I thought should happen. I really believed that it could never happen to me. You know, there's a wonderful book about adult children alcoholics called It Can Never Happen to Me by Claudia Black. And that book was one of the ways that I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. What I found happening in my last couple of years of drinking was I was becoming a lot of the things that I didn't like about my dad. I liked to drink in brightly lit places, you know, really bright bars where I could see all the people. And I was at the point where I was now starting to be belligerent. You know, I'd meet somebody and start talking to him, usually him. And pretty soon I was, you know, attacking his arguments and whatever. I was finding myself getting more and more belligerent. And I thought, you know, that's one of the character traits of my dad. And I'm doing it, you know, this thing that can never happen to me. How did I get to Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, I started drinking when I was about 17 years old. I drank in San Francisco. In those days, I thought it was quite sophisticated to be able to be 17, go to a hotel in downtown San Francisco with a girlfriend, have lunch, have a whiskey sour, you know. It just made me so sophisticated. And it changed me. What I knew about alcohol for me was when I put alcohol inside of me, and I knew this from the very beginning, noise quieted down up here. I got prettier, wittier, happier, more self-confident, less self, I can't even say the word tonight, conscious, thank you. Hello, am I conscious? Less self-conscious, and I was able to say and do things that I couldn't do when I didn't have alcohol in me. And that worked for a while. Alcohol worked for a very long while for me, actually for about 17 years. And I used it as a social lubricant. I used it to feel comfortable in situations that I wouldn't have felt comfortable in. And what happened for me is what I think happens for most of us. It, one, no longer served me as well. I could no longer control the amount that I drank or the behaviors that I had when I drank alcohol. You know, as sophisticated as I thought drinking made me when I was 17, I always, when I got to the point where I drank and got drunk, I always threw up. I always passed out. I was a blackout drinker from very early on. And it wasn't until I was sober for a while that I realized what blackouts really are. I thought it was I didn't remember what had happened that night. The real truth was I wasn't even present for what happened that night. You know, I'm just not there when I'm in a blackout state. I'm not aware of what's going on around me. I never had completely total blackouts, though. I had this thing that I used to call the oh shit mornings, because I would be walking around, you know, having a cup of coffee and thinking about the night before. And oh my God, I didn't say that. Oh, shit, I didn't do that. You know, it would start coming back. So I lived with incredible remorse and guilt and regret about my drinking for a very long period of time. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was about 34 years old because I had spent the day with my best friend, and it was December the 7th. It was Pearl Harbor Day. I can remember that very well. And she met me at my place, and we went out to cut down a Christmas tree that we were going to put in my house and decorate it that day and everything. But then we went out to lunch after we got the tree. I think we got the tree in a bucket of water and went out to lunch, and we drank through the afternoon. And then we had dinner at her house, and her boyfriend came over about 10 o'clock that night. I probably would have been there a lot longer, but this guy had had the nerve to tell my friend Pam that he thought I had a problem with my drinking. I hated the guy. I mean, can you imagine him saying that I had a problem with my drinking? So when he walked in the door, I had to walk out the door. I was living in Monterey County. I lived in Pacific Grove. My friend lived in Pebble Beach. She rented a house there. And I drove out of Pebble Beach past Asilomar, where Asilomar is there. And I don't know exactly what happened, if I swerved to avoid an animal or if I moved the steering wheel too fast, but I found myself in my car meeting a very large rock. I totaled the car. I had a hairline fracture in my nose. I had really bloody inside of my mouth because I was wearing braces at the time. And it just, you know, I hit the steering wheel and I smashed everything against the inside of the tissue of my mouth. And I was driving barefoot without my contact lenses on because my feet always hurt when I drank. And I always had to take my contact lenses out when I drank. So, you know, God, I mean, it was in no state to be driving. And what I remember is getting out of my car because I was asked to. I noticed bright lights. I was asked to get out of my car. And I had to do a field sobriety test. And as soon as he asked me to close my eyes, I knew it was over because I couldn't stand up if I closed my eyes. I lost my balance. So I heard, you know, you're arrested for drunk driving. I went down to the Pacific Grove police station in the back of that squad car. And, you know, it was sort of like, oh, my God, what is happening to me? I called that friend. She had a very good friend who was an attorney, and they got me out of jail, I think, by about midnight. And I went home, they took me home. I passed out, talked to her the next morning. My friend had been in Al-Anon at that point for probably more than 20 years. And I said to her, oh, God, Pam, I think I have to do something about my drinking. She said, Linda, I think you're overreacting. And I had totaled the car and got arrested for drunk driving. And my dear friend said to me, you know, I think you're overreacting. Well, of course, that's what I wanted to believe. I left one thing out of the story. That morning, I had said to my friend Pam when she picked me up, oh, by the way, you know, if I'm ever going to get arrested for drunk driving, I got to do it by the end of the year. Because January 1st of 1982, the law in the state of California changed, and it was mandatory jail time, you know? So I knew if I was ever going to get arrested for drunk driving, I needed to get out of the way, so be careful of what you say out loud. That's what the moral of that story is for me. You know, I couldn't go to work for a couple of days. I was really, really, really worried about my name being in the newspaper. You know, the little town newspaper and everything like that was in the newspaper because I read everything like that in that little town newspaper all the time. And sure enough, my name appeared in print there. I had a pretty responsible job in Monterey with some, you know, some position in the community. And I really did not want to embarrass myself or embarrass my company. And, you know, I don't know how much I embarrassed my company, but I certainly really embarrassed myself. And what happened was I got sentenced to a two-day, like 4 hours in the afternoon on a Saturday, class about alcoholism and about not driving while drunk, and I went to the first one. I'm a good girl. I always follow all the rules, most of them, and I couldn't go to the second one. I had to work the second Saturday. I didn't bother to let the instructor know, let my attorney know, let the judge know, so of course I found myself back in court. Now instead of two sessions, I had to do 16 or something like that. 16, I don't remember what the number was, but it was over a long period of time, once a week. I had to be there for 2 or 3 hours. And something started to change for me then. The woman who was teaching the class was an alcoholism counselor. She was also a Christian counselor. The classes that still stick out in my mind are the one about the family disease of alcoholism. You know, I grew up with the family disease of alcoholism, but that's not what I knew that it was. I mean, I just thought it was lack of willpower or cruelty or something on my father's part, why he wouldn't stop drinking. And the other one that really struck me was, where do we go from here? You know, where do you go from here after you've already been arrested for drunk driving? And there were a lot of people in the class who were joking about that. Some of the guys were saying, oh, yeah, when I'm driving around, I'll just keep my beer bottle below the level of the window so the cops can't see it. And there was another woman. There were a number of women in the class. There were probably about 16 or 18 of us all together, but just a couple of women. And the other woman was in a complete wire cage. You know, she had broken her neck while she was drunk driving. And she and I looked at each other, you know, at that moment, like, where do we go from here? When everybody else was joking around, and we both had like the silent communication, like something has to change for us. We both knew it. I wished I'd been able to stay in touch with that woman because my life has changed dramatically, and I hope that hers has too. So what happened after that was the woman who was teaching the class, I decided I needed to talk to her. I totaled a car. I was riding a bus around in Monterey County, which is a lot harder than getting around in Sonoma County, which I think is probably pretty difficult by bus. But I had to get everywhere, so I made an appointment with her. I wanted to go in and talk to her in her office, and I made an appointment, and I had to take the bus there, and I got there really early. And when I sat down, I thought, oh, my God, why in the hell am I here? What am I doing? What am I going to say to this woman? And I had about 45 minutes, so I went back to the desk, and I asked them if they had some paper. So I took paper and a pen, and I sat there, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote, because I was afraid I was not going to be able to talk to her once I got in there. And that's exactly what happened when I got in there. I could not talk to her. I mean, I said, you know, told her a little bit about my family's alcoholism, and I said, here, I think you should read this. And I gave her those two or three sheets of paper that I had filled up to read. And she read them, and she looked up at me, and she said, well, Linda, how long have you been depressed? I did not know I was depressed. I've been depressed for a very long time. I used a depressant to help with that situation, and you know the result that we wind up when we add those two things together. So what began for me was weekly meetings with her. I went into therapy for the first time in my life. Got a new car, started to, you know, get around town and stuff again. And she started talking to me like the very first meeting about, did I think I had a problem with alcohol? Now, I really did not want her to talk about that. That was not why I was there. You know, I was there because of these other problems. But she kept on talking about it, and finally, I think after the third or fourth meeting, I said, okay, I'll go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'll go. I will go probably one time. I really don't think it's for me, but I will go. I said, but if I go, I want to go to that Saturday night meeting you talked about in class. It was called the Bay Group, which I remembered her saying about it was a large group. They had lots of fun. They went on ski trips. I had never been on a ski trip. I thought that if I was going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, why not go on a ski trip too? So the other thing that we had talked about in those first couple of weeks that I saw her was, you know, did I have a problem with alcohol? And she gave me a method to figure out whether I thought I had a problem or not. She really wanted me to be the one who made that decision. And what she said to me, I know what she said to me. What I heard was, Linda, if you can not drink for 30 days, you don't have a problem with alcohol. What she really said was, why don't you try not drinking for 30 days and see what kind of an answer you come up with. But I decided that I would prove that I was not alcoholic. So I count as part of my sobriety that almost first month where I did no drinking while I was proving that I was not alcoholic. And I have to tell you, those were that was probably some of the most miserable 30 days I've lived in my entire life. And a lot of the previous year had been pretty miserable because between December 7th and my sobriety date's October 16th, between those two dates, I had made a vow that I was never going to get arrested for drunk driving again. I didn't say I was never going to drive drunk again, but what I promised myself was I was never going to. I learned that later, you know, that's what I'd really said. What I tried to do was pace myself drinking. So what I did was I drank at about the same pace you did, you know, so I had to keep wine in my glass. It was really painful to drink that way, you know, to really have to slow it down. My usual thing was to get a couple of them in me so I felt comfortable, you know, and I could start to talk to people. God, it was miserable. But that 30 days was even worse than those 10 months or so had been. So she had a client, another client, who was a member of AA. She said, well, I'll talk to her and see if she would be willing to take you to a meeting, because I didn't think I could walk into Alcoholics Anonymous by myself. So this woman picked me up on a Saturday night. The Bay Group at that time was about 170 people on a Saturday night. It was a speaker meeting, so it was a big, you know, one speaker meeting. Thank God this woman went to the meetings early. Thank God she did, because I got there when there were about 30 people in the room, and I was able to be there as it filled up. I'm not sure I could have walked into a room of 170 mostly sober alcoholics and been able to stay there. I don't know that I would have been able to do that. I started crying when they started reading How It Works. I mean, I instantly knew that here was a place I needed to be. The guy who told his story that night, Bob F., was, we had nothing in common. I mean, really, nothing in common, except he told my story that night. What he told the story of was feeling his entire life like he had arrived on the planet without the instruction map or the instruction book or the map that everybody else had gotten. Now, I had never had those thoughts in those words, but I had felt that way my entire life, like I just didn't fit in, you know, that somehow everybody else knew how to do it, and I didn't know how to do it. Boy, that was incredible. I have to tell you, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned that the instructions are right in here. You know, I just didn't have this book from the time I could read. It's gotten a lot simpler since I got to AA. What happened for me was that night I was invited to go out to coffee with the group, so I now was no longer drinking alcohol, but I was drinking coffee and having sugar every night at about 9 or 9:30 when we got out of a meeting. Did that for more than a year, probably. But I went to coffee that first night. The women gave me their phone numbers. I had a little deposit slip from doing an ATM machine, and they wrote their phone numbers on this thing. It's about the size of a credit card. And I carried that around with me for several years, you know, because I used it. I picked up the phone and I called those women, because there were lots of times I didn't know what in the heck to do that first year. That woman who took me to my first meeting took me to a couple of meetings. We went to a meeting on Sunday night. That was Saturday night. Went to a meeting on a Sunday night at a beautiful recovery house, a two-story Victorian, beautiful building in Pacific Grove. I absolutely loved going. I'd driven by that building a lot. You know, people, residential treatment program. I just thought it was incredible. I loved that Sunday night meeting. It was small. It was intimate. We sat around on the floor and in chairs around a fireplace. The third meeting, however, was the one that really scared me. It was going to be a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I looked at the schedule. I didn't know what that meant, but I was pretty sure that's where the secret handshakes, the how much money you have to commit, all that stuff was going to happen on that night. And for me, what it was a group of people. For some reason, this room, we sat around a table and we all introduced ourselves. But other than that, it was exactly like the meetings I'd gone to both on Saturday and Sunday nights. I asked that woman to become my sponsor. And she said that people she sponsored went to a meeting every day for 30 days. Now, I heard 90 meetings in 90 days a lot in the room. She told me 30 days. I think she probably figured that I would have turned tail and run if she had said any more than 30 days. So I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous on a regular basis. And in Monterey, the custom is that you introduce yourself, and the speaker calls on people from the audience, from the group. And, you know, in my second and third week, I was having people calling on me. And I really, at that point, had not decided whether I was alcoholic or not. And that was what I talked about when they called on me. I said, you know, I don't really know whether I belong in these rooms or not. I feel like I fit, but, you know, I'm not 100% sure. My sponsor encouraged me to go to a women's meeting on Tuesday night and a women's meeting on Friday night. The Friday night meeting was really small. It was a really close-knit group of women, and I really started to get some healing happening in that meeting. And the Tuesday meeting I went to, I think it was about week three, two of the women after the meeting came up to me and started talking to me, and they said, you know, Linda, I don't know if this will help, but If you weren't alcoholic, you probably would have been able to make up your mind about that and move on. Only alcoholics get stuck in the question. And that opened a door for me. That really opened a door for me. I had earned my chair then, and I knew I could stay. There were really simple things, really simple, clear communications like that that happened for me almost, once a week through my first year of sobriety. My first year of sobriety, I was pretty much on a pink cloud. I also cried just about every day. I know those sounds like those aren't the two same things, but I cried out of gratitude. I cried out of identification. I cried because I was just so darn relieved that there was something that could help me. Plus, I was in therapy, and I was starting to be able to discover some things that I'd been carrying around with myself for a very long time, and I think it was really wonderful for me that those two things intersected exactly the way that they did. I really felt like I was held gently my first year of sobriety. And about 10 months of sobriety, my job changed. My company decided that I should no longer be in Monterey, that I should be in San Francisco. I really did not want to leave Monterey because I was 10 months sober. I had found a church home. I really believe that God does not require very much of us. It talks about that a lot in the big book. And someday when I have time, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write down all of those times that says, all you need is a crack in the door of willingness. All you need is, open-mindedness. All you need is, just the littlest bit of thing. And the reason I mention that is I had chosen the church that I was attending at the time for all the wrong reasons. I believe that the AA group I chose for all the wrong reasons, the ski trip. But what I believe is, just by opening myself up, I chose the church because it was made out of redwood. It had Gothic arches, which I loved. It had stained glass windows. Two of them were Tiffany stained glass windows. But what I found there was also what I was finding in Alcoholics Anonymous, a warm body of people who accepted me, who loved me. I really believe that my first year of sobriety in that year in that church, I had people love me till I could start to love myself. I had never loved myself. One of my dad's messages to me when he was drunk was that I was a hateful child, and I really took that in. And I thought not only was I hateful, but that also meant that I was unlovable. So to find love in Alcoholics Anonymous was a wonderful thing. My sponsor also was, a big book thumper. And she also was one of those people who said, no relationships for the first year. And that was fine with me. It was just fine with me because, I had been trying to meet Mr. Right in all the wrong places for a very long period of time. And to live, just knowing that that wasn't even an option for me that first year, it was a really good thing. So I moved at 10 months of sobriety. There was a fellow in Monterey who was 25 years sober the year that I moved. He and Clancy got sober in the same, Clancy is down in Southern California, Midnight Mission. They got sober in the same, I think, used car lot or derelict car lot or something. I think they were living in the back of different cars. But my group and the Pacific group did baseball things and traveled back and forth. And that guy sent me to a man in San Francisco. He said, you need to get in touch with Frank B., and he will get you in touch with the women. So I did that. This guy was like a little leprechaun of a man. He was short, wore a sport coat all the time, had a flower in his lapel. I think he took them out of somebody's garden every day, wore a hat constantly, knew everybody. I swear to God, he knew everybody in San Francisco and Alcoholics Anonymous. Told me to meet him at the Longshoreman's Hall on a Sunday night. I was scared to death to go to the Longshoreman's Hall by myself on a Sunday night. I mean, oh my God. I did it. He told me to do it. The other guy had told me to go look him up. So he introduced me to the women in San Francisco, and that began another whole wonderful chapter for me. I was probably about 14 months sober when the first person asked me to sponsor her. I went to a regular Tuesday night women's meeting at a women's recovery facility in San Francisco, and that was where a person in residence there asked me to be her sponsor. That sponsee, by the way, is still sober, which is amazing to me. It's just amazing to me that, the little bit that I had to transmit, she got and she picked up and ran with. And, what you find in the rooms, what you just find up and take with yourself as tools. One of the other things my first sponsor said to me, that in that big room, there was so much energy and so much love, you could just feel it in the room. And she said, Linda, just reach your hand out, take a handful of it, put it in your pocket, and take it with you everywhere. The other thing that first sponsor did for me was she got me involved in the steps right away. You know, when I was at 8 months of sobriety and I had not written my fourth step yet, she said, you know, get with it, you know, get it done. So I read about the thorough house cleaning that we're supposed to do in the fourth step. So that's what I did literally. I cleaned my house. I cleaned out closets. I mean, you know, everything was spotless. And I did an awful lot of thinking during that long extended period of time that I cleaned my house. And I finally sat down with pen and paper. And my first fourth step wasn't in the columns like it's set up in the book, but it was a long narrative. And you know, we did get to the calm finally. You know, I didn't write that part, but what we got to was what my part was in each one of those situations. And that was an amazing thing for me to own my part and not feel guilty, you know, but to be able to simply recognize my part and with humility, you know, be able to go on to the eighth and ninth step and ask forgiveness from my higher power and express my amends to the people that I had harmed in my life. The steps are a really powerful tool. My home group is a women's step study meeting here in Santa Rosa on Wednesday nights. It is an amazing group of women. I love being there. I took a break from Alcoholics Anonymous for about 12 years. I only went to meetings and picked up my chip once a year, went with my husband once a year when he picked up his chip. I was involved in some other spiritual pursuits. And then 11 years ago, I awoke one morning not feeling great. And as the morning progressed, I had a hot spot in my back, numbness and tingling in my left leg. And within 24 hours, I was paralyzed below the waist. And that was an incredible time in my life. And one of my friends, probably my best friend in sobriety, came and saw me regularly in the hospital. I was spent a week at Memorial Hospital and spent another 3 weeks in a rehab facility, you know, physical rehabilitation, learning how to transfer from a wheelchair to a bed, learning how to stand in parallel bars. You know, it was a really, really depressing point in my life, but I really knew that there was something that God had brought me to that I needed to face and heal, and that happened while I was in the hospital. My friend Jamie came and visited me regularly. She kept talking about the Women's Step Study meeting, and when I was able to drive a year later, it took me a year to be able to learn how to drive again, I started going to that meeting on a regular basis. I talked to newcomers there. That was one of the things that was guaranteed to me, that if I talked to newcomers, I would be able to keep what I was given. And those are the most important people in the room, in any room. So I welcome the newcomers here tonight. You know, we're all newcomers. We're all newcomers today. You know, life keeps changing. I've lost both of my parents in sobriety. I lost my brother. I have a brother who was 4 years younger than me. He was a heroin addict at age 16. He died with 4 years of sobriety. And I'm really grateful that that happened. My sister is still not in recovery. She's the only one left in my family. I had just had back surgery right after my brother died, and I was not able to go to the memorial service that was held at an AA meeting, after an AA meeting for him. But what that group did, and I don't know if I can say this without crying, what that group did was they passed around a big book, and they all wrote in the book. I love that when you go to a convention, you know, everybody gets to sign in a big book. I always sign by the shortest sentence in the book, which says, it works, it really does. But they all signed that book, and they gave that book to my sister that night. And I know she has a big book, you know? And, you know, I just hope that she will find the recovery that I've found. I am always overjoyed when I hear of family members who are in AA together, you know, that have either the child's come first or the parents come first and the other family members follow them in. It truly is a, for me, I believe it's a factor in my genes that I have this predisposition to alcohol. I have the physical allergy. I have the mental obsession. And as long as I stay with my feet firmly planted in the 12 steps and doing the simple things that I was taught that first year, I know that I can keep my recovery and I can keep giving it away. Thank you for smiling at me, those of you who did during this. I've never been able to talk for 45 minutes before. I can't believe I could do that. Thank you very much.